Hello, everybody, and welcome to a beautiful Thursday morning here in New York. It is really beautiful. Sun is shining. The trees are sparkling gold and orange. It's just such a beautiful morning, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you. I am back from my wonderful trip to Europe. I first had the pleasure of going to Berlin with my daughter to visit some of the wonderful museums there and some artwork. And we actually had a wonderful dinner at a gallery where there were some art, some sound artists doing a vegetarian dinner in the gallery. And it was just such a wonderful, fun, interactive evening. That was wonderful. And then, of course, I went to Terra Madre, Salone del Gusto, which is the International Slow Food Conference in Turin, Italy. I go as a representative for our local Slow Food North Shore chapter. And it's always such a wonderful experience to be there and feel like you are part of a growing, dynamic community that is really trying to change the way we all eat and our food system, and to raise awareness. And the movement is really, really growing, and I'm, you know, coming back feeling with some renewed energy to really try to encourage people in the Long Island area where I live to get involved. There are so many issues, and food is the connecting piece, the piece that everybody has to participate. We all eat, and we all need to care about where our food comes from and the quality of our food. And the slow food movement is really raising that awareness and making people realize that we need to take back our local food system, that we are not going to feed the 9 billion people that are expected on the planet by genetically modifying our seeds and spraying with heavier pesticides and fertilizers and raising our animals in factories so that they're, you know, given so many antibiotics and GMO feed. And all this is just has taken us down a path where our population is getting sicker. We're losing the connections to the people who are growing our food. And there is this grassroots movement, which is really growing, to take that back and to get our food out of the hands of factory farmers and mega corporations who are just, you know, caring only about the profit they make and have no regard for the people who are eating the food or the planet that they are degrading. So anyway, this event was just so wonderful. I have to share with you that there's a real renewed energy on the part of Slow Food International and Slow Food USA to get schools to have a garden. We would love to see a garden in every school because the awareness that when children start by eating vegetables that they grow, they're much more likely to eat them, and that the school garden can be an extended classroom, and every course and the interdisciplinary possibilities are endless within the garden. And the garden also just connects children to nature again. We're losing this connection with all the computers and cell phones and tablets that kids are on all day long. They're forgetting what it means to be outside and to watch a worm wiggle its way out of the earth, and the birds and, you know, the bees. You know, we all have been hearing about the problem with our bees, colony collapse, and we need to get rid of the pesticides that are killing the bees, and, you know, for the kids to see the bees and to see the bees go from one flower to the next flower pollinating. It's just, you know, one of those miracles in life that our kids need to be a part of. And so there's a real expansion of school gardens. SOFID USA has actually hired a full-time school garden coordinator that they put together a booklet. So if you are connected to any schools and you would like to see a school garden in your school, do get in touch with your local Slow Food chapter and see if they can help you. There is some funding. And one thing that really became clear, though, from the school gardens is you really need to work with people from the inside. When we come in as a Slow Food person to a school, they already have to really want it and have teachers from the inside that are willing to work in the garden. Because Slow Food does not have the resources, and most schools don't have the resources to just have a gardening teacher that's full-time, although that would be lovely if we could. So the Slow Food person can coordinate and make sure that all the tools and everything's set up so that when the teachers come out to work in the garden, they're ready to go. But you really need people within that want to take this up. And it's also such a wonderful opportunity to bring the local community together in fundraising and working together to clear the gardens and build the raised beds. And it's just a really great project to take on. So if you are connected to a school and like to see a school garden, reach out to your local Slow Food chapter and see if you can make that happen. As a food teacher, I love to go into the schools once they have those gardens and help them learn what they can do with the vegetables that they're growing. Cooking has become an integral part of the curriculum in many countries. And it used to be a little bit of part of our culture here with home economics. However, it was only for the girls. Everybody needs to cook, and everybody needs to learn how to cook. And so many of us don't have those role models anymore, those grandmas and mothers that are in the kitchen cooking. And so we need to bring that art back. And as an artist, food has really been my art for many, many years. And creating with the colors and the tastes from the garden is just extraordinary. So do reach out to me or someone in your local community who can also bring the garden to life through cooking classes and food literacy. So that's really a great move. Another thing that I saw at the Slow Food Conference was a new initiative that Slow Food is launching called Slow Meat. And I've been really resistant as someone who has not eaten meat or chicken for over 40 years. The idea of being affiliated with an organization that's pushing this concept of slow meat is really against my gut. However, after being in so many conferences and listening to people speak, especially this one man, Joe Maxwell from the Humane Society, he's actually a hog farmer. Who now has become more politically active than really working on his farm. He realized that he had more in common with the environmentalists and the people who care about the life of an animal than he did with factory farmers who are raising meat and poultry in a horrible, cruel, unhealthy way. And so he's become really active, and the Slow Meat campaign is really not one to encourage people to eat meat, but it's acknowledging that if you are going to be eating meat anyway, you want to make sure that you're eating meat that is raised in a humane way, that the animals have access to pasture from the time they're born till the time they die, not just, you know, where they're finished off on grass, but where they really are outdoors and living the life that they're meant to live before they are killed. And the meat is healthier, it's better for the environment, and also it's supporting people that are trying to do it in the right way. So the Slow Meat campaign is encouraging people to eat less meat, but better quality, and also being willing to pay the higher cost of that quality. One thing that really came out loud and clear is we need to get factory farms through legislation to become responsible for the true cost of what their meat costs. This cheap meat that everyone's used to paying for, can happen only because our government subsidized the cheap feed that these animals eat, so they're not paying the real cost of the food. Also, our governments and local communities end up cleaning up the pollution and the water from the pollutants from the animals, both in their waste and in the groundwater from all the chemicals. And so we need to get these factory farms to pay that bill for their cleanup, and local communities should not have to foot that bill. So if the factory farms had to incorporate that cost of cleaning up their pollution into the cost of meat, that cheap meat would no longer be so cheap, and then the playing field would be more equalized. So we need to really work with our legislators, and that's why we all need to get out and vote. Next week is the vote, and very often, you know, we have, I think, in this country, the lowest turnout for voting, especially in a mid-election where it's not, you know, the president. And so we need to get people out there to vote. We need to support the bills in Colorado and Washington for GMO labeling. Out in California, they have a soda tax bill happening. There's lots of local legislation that is trying to be pushed through Congress and the local senates to make our food healthier. And we need to all get out wherever you live and vote. And very often you can vote through, like, the Green Party or the Working Family Party for the same candidate that you want, but make a statement by doing that. One thing you want to be careful about is diluting your vote with a fringe person that you know can't win, even if you do like their ideals, to make a statement, because you can remember what happened with Al Gore. Instead of him being our president, we got Bush. So got to be careful about that. On another note, I will be, I have a wonderful guest today who's going to be coming on, Dr. Marla Friedman. She is has a PhD in psychology and is a licensed, nationally certified clinical mental health counselor for over 30 years. And she also just wrote a wonderful book, so she'll be coming on in just a moment. But I want to share with you a recipe and also some other wonderful things going on in our local area that you may want to go to. Tonight is Edible New York City's Edible Landscape, and that is an opportunity to travel around the world without going anywhere. It's in the city, and it's featuring over food from over 20 different nationalities. And there's top chefs and local breweries and wineries there that will be serving their delicious food. And that will be at the Metropolitan Pavilion. And that's tonight, and I believe there's still tickets left. Starts at 6 o'clock. Also tonight, if you are out on Long Island, at the Belmore Fire Hall at 6:30, there is a meeting to work together to oppose the Port Ambrose liquefied natural gas facility that they're trying to push through out in the coast of Long Island, between Long Island and New Jersey, the same spot that we're hoping to get a wind farm. So there's the opportunity of either having a wind farm there, which, of course, is renewable and a natural resource that we'd like to tap into more and get away from fossil fuels and liquid gas. So that's a great meeting to go to. Tomorrow, Columbia Business School is having their social enterprise conference, and Slow Money New York City is one of the presenters. They've actually been called together to put together a panel at this event. I know Algar is the keynote speaker. It should be a great event. It's all day long. It's a bit pricey, but there's a range depending on where you fall in the ticket offerings, from $250 down to $60. So you can go onto the either the Slow Money New York City website or Columbia Business School's website and find out more about that, or just Google Social Enterprise Conference, Columbia Social Enterprise Conference, and you'll find out more about that. On November 2nd, New York City Sustainable Farm to Restaurant Producer Summit is happening up at the Hawthorne Valley Farm in Ghent, New York, and that's an all-day event. It's only $30. It includes transportation from New York City, as well as breakfast, lunch, and afternoon refreshments. So if you have a sustainable farm or a restaurant and you'd like to help make those connections, this is the event for you. Long Island Restaurant Week is happening starting November 2nd through the 9th. That's always fun. November 3rd, there's a Citizens Climate Lobby. This is one nonprofit organization that really has a concrete solution to help bring down our carbon pollution through a carbon tax. And this meeting will take place at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Shelter Rock in Manhasset at 6:30 on November 3rd. And November 8th, I would love to see many of you at the Voices of Hope in a Time of Crisis event that's taking place at Cooper Union in their Great Hall, and it's sponsored by the Small Planet Fund, which is Anna and Francis Moore Lappe's organization. And it's a great organization. It's all day long. It's from 10 to 5. They have inspirational speakers from around the world that will be speaking, and they're trying to pull together people that really want to take the helm and, you know, move forward leading a movement of sustainability and good food. So if you are available and want to get more involved, that's a great opportunity. November 8th, Voices of Hope in a Time of Crisis. Also, the Shin Estate Vineyard out in Matatuck is having their annual harvest wine dinner. That is next weekend, November 8th, and that is a wonderful event. And then Long Island Community Garden is sponsoring a film screening called Ground Operations, and that will be taking place out at Stony Brook University. There's also a book signing and reading by Scott Chasky, who has a new book called Seed Time. And Scott, if you don't know him, is the amazing farmer behind Quail Hill Farm out in Amagansett, which is, I think, the oldest CSA in the country, possibly, certainly in New York. But he's great, and the Long Island Community Garden organization is great. So if you are out on the east end of Long Island at Stony Brook on November 10th, this is going to be a great event. And there's so many different things going on. I think the best thing is to check my website at iegreen.com, go to events, and you'll find out more what's going on. The recipe I want to share with you is a corn-encrusted tofu with a black bean and tomato tapenade. Of course, inspired by the end of my season, I have so many cherry tomatoes and peppers still hanging on in the garden, so this is a great way to use a lot of them up. You want to start with a block of extra firm tofu that you're going to cut into slices about a quarter inch thick. For the crust, you're going to need 2 cups of organic corn flakes that you're going to pulse in a food processor until they're coarse crumbs, but not, you do not want to make them smooth. You want to leave them crumbly. 2 tablespoons of good tasting nutritional yeast, 1/2 teaspoon of chili powder, 1/2 teaspoon salt, and 2 eggs. For the tapenade, you're going to want 2 cups of finely chopped red onion. You can use white onion too. I just had red onion here, and that's what I used. Olive oil, 2 peppers, the color doesn't matter, whatever you have on hand or in the garden, and then 2 jalapenos. You know, up to you how spicy you want it. You can put jalapenos, serranos, whatever, but you want a little spice in this tapenade. 4 cups of cherry tomatoes cut in half, 2 tablespoons of chopped garlic, 1 can of organic black beans rinsed and drained, 1/4 cup of chopped cilantro and 1/4 cup of chopped parsley, 1/2 teaspoon cumin, 1 teaspoon chili powder, 1 teaspoon salt or more if you desire, and 2 tablespoons of white wine. You're going to start by cutting the tofu, as I said, and lay it out on a clean dish towel. Put another dish towel on top, and then I put a cookie sheet on top of that with like a couple cookbooks in it just to weight it down to make the tofu a little firmer, and that will help it hold together when you're frying it up. Meanwhile, in a heavy saute pan, you're going to saute the onions and the garlic in some olive oil. When those become translucent, add the peppers, the jalapenos, the cumin, and the chili powder. And by doing that, whenever you add the spices early on, you allow those flavors really to burst out and, you know, come through. Then you're going to add the white wine, let that cook down for a couple of minutes before adding the tomatoes and the salt. Then you're going to let that mixture cook down till most of the liquid's absorbed. Add the black beans, the herbs, the cilantro and parsley, and allow it to simmer for 10 minutes while you cook up the tofu. So just put that on the back burner on really low. You can cover it if you'd like, and just let that sit. And meanwhile, in another cast iron skillet, you are going to put some olive oil down on the bottom, and you're going to take out two pie plates. You're going to put the eggs in one pie plate and then the mixture of the corn flakes, the nutritional yeast, and the spices in the other one. And dip the tofu cutlets into the egg and then into the corn crumbs. And when the oil is hot, you're going to fry those up. And I had to do it in two rounds because I didn't use a big enough pan. If you have the kind of skillet that can go across two burners, you can do it all at once. And you're just going to fry that up till they're golden brown on each side, and then remove it onto some paper towel to absorb the any of the extra oil, and then serve immediately. Take the tofu cutlets and taste the tapenade before you put it on. Make sure the salt is right. If you want to add any more pepper, if it's not spicy enough, you can always add some crushed red pepper flakes or ground cayenne to make it a little spicier. And then you put that on top of the corn, and it's just such a wonderful mixture, the crispy, crunchy tofu cutlets with the tapenade on top, and it's just a great dish, and it looks beautiful. So enjoy that. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Marla Miller. Her new book that she just came out with, Love, Freedom, and Wellness, A Guide to Living an Empowered Life, is a wonderful book, and she'll tell us more about it. Marla has a PhD in psychology, and she's a licensed nationally certified mental health counselor, and has been practicing for over 30 years. She also is a certified nutritionist and has an associate from the Viktor Frankl Institute for Meaning-Centered Therapy. Viktor Frankl, I know of his work, having gone to the Waldorf School for years. He was a Holocaust survivor and an amazing psychologist of his own, so he's wonderful. And so she studied there. She also is a board-certified anti-aging, regenerative, and functional medicine provider and holds a certification from the Institute for Functional Medicine in applying functional medicine in clinical practice. Marla, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
I'm so glad you could join me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bhavani. And I want to make sure everyone knows my last name is Friedman. It's Dr. Marla Friedman. And Bhavani, I'm honored to be part of your wonderful show and information and your wonderful community sharing such vital information.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure to do it. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. So anyway, let's talk about everything that you do, because you do some amazing work. Can you first just share with everybody your background and how you got involved in mind-body wellness?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's really a long journey, which I'm very grateful for. Way before nutrition was popular, I became interested. And as a little side note, when I think back of when I was finishing high school and entering college, already a young college student, I kind of informed my family that I didn't want to eat the food that they were eating because I was reading all these books on nutrition, and I also tried to get my entire family into therapy. So that's nutrition and psychology right there. And those are kind of really my roots, and I kind of laugh when I think of it because I was already, you know, really looking for deeper truths and deeper meanings and wanting to bring those things together. So that was really kind of my roots. And then I studied psychology, studied education and psychology, and became a psychotherapist, which I've been practicing for many, many years. Love doing that work, and I will explain further why. And all along I was studying nutrition just personally. And Bhavani, you and I, you know each other from way back, and I really appreciate so much your knowledge and how we meet in this place today.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always been, you know, passionate about nutrition and wellness and wanting things to be sustainable, natural, you know, how we can really stay healthy through empowerment and prevention and living a lifestyle that reflects that. And it really does involve body, mind, and spirit. It's, you know, we're complex beings, so it really is from different parts of us that need to all kind of come to alignment. But that was kind of the beginning, and along the way, as I was doing my psychotherapy practice, which I continue to do today and will always do, I also then went back to school. And I've always been a big going back to school person. I've supported many people to do the same. And I then got my degrees in nutrition, functional medicine, anti-aging, and regenerative, and, you know, functional and preventive medicine, and incorporated that into my psychotherapy practice.
And are those all separate things? The nutritionist is getting certified as a nutritionist is different than the anti-aging, regenerative, and functional medicine, correct?
That's right. I first got my first nutrition degree. I became a certified nutritionist. That was in a two-year program. And then I was figuring out how to integrate that into a psychotherapy practice. And to this day, people will say to me, you're a psychotherapist and a nutritionist? How do those two go together? Mm-hmm. And what's truly... I truly realize it more every day, even though I've been doing it for so long now, is they totally go together. But then I went back and to school again, and I did it was something about 2.5 to 3 year fellowship in from the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, where I did a whole fellowship in anti-aging, nutritional and preventive, regenerative medicine. And I also studied at the Institute for Functional Medicine and also received a certificate from there. So all of those pieces plus much more, because nutrition is something you can study forever, you know, because there's so much always to learn. And
I think there's also so much that they don't know and is always changing. You know, I had Deborah Madison on a few weeks ago talking about her revised cookbook, and I, you know, asked her why she revised it, and she was saying, you know, 20 years ago when she came out with that book, you know, no one was eating kale salad. You know, we were told 20 years ago that coconut oil was a bad oil, and now they say coconut oil is a great oil.
It's so true.
Nutrition changes according to what science is getting out there, and although the fact that you see things contradictory over time makes you also realize that it's a learning process. They don't necessarily know. A lot of times people are making the best guesstimate that they can, but it's not a hard fact sometimes.
That's absolutely true. Things are changing. There's new research, there's new studies, and of course it always depends on the source, the philosophy, what's behind it. And then there's a whole other dimension to, I agree with you completely what you're saying, is, you know, also cutting through the hype that's out there and really getting to the real sources of true information, I think is essential. That's one of the reasons people seek nutritionists. Many people, for example, either take no supplements or they have so many they don't know what to do with them, and they're overwhelmed with bottles and they don't even remember why they got them.
Right.
And I often have people come to my office when they come for nutrition, because I really see my office as my practice as having two doors in a sense. You know, the nutrition door and the psychotherapy door, but often they become combined because they so go together. And I would definitely like to elaborate more on that. But I often help streamline things for people so they're not overwhelmed and cut through the hype and make things much more simple in a certain way. Not that it isn't complex, but it's simple in terms of it's really a lifestyle. And it's about creating a lifestyle that's empowered and honoring oneself, one's body, one's spirit in the way we take care of ourselves. And that goes into the psychology part of nutrition, and which we'll talk about more and, you know, as we talk today.
Right.
But it's such a crucial part.
I'm sure you have. Have you seen, well, you know, firsthand working with clients that when you help them change their diet, do a lot of their psychological struggles also get better?
There is no question to that, and that's one of the things I find so exciting and why I love having, you know, an integrative practice, because they so completely affect each other. Like when someone comes in, for example, with, and one of the most common things that people are dealing with in our society today, where there is so much adversity and struggles and challenges going on, a lot of people have depression and anxiety. And when they're eating poorly and they're having trouble with their self-care because they're not feeling so good and maybe haven't ever learned that in the first place, it totally, you know, makes it worse, of course. And when they start taking better care of themselves, and self-care is a huge word for me, and it's very much in my book and in my message to everyone I speak to that I help, incorporating and learning that skill. It's like a skill, and it's like a new paradigm to develop inside if someone doesn't have that, and many people do not, of self-care. And when people are, you know, really starting to eat better and eat healthier and more whole food and more nourishment, because our bodies truly need real nourishment, or we can't make the brain chemicals and the adrenal chemicals and hormones that our bodies need to adapt to stress, deal with disappointments, deal with overcoming adversity. And somebody said to me once, and it made me think of this when you asked me, that someone who was struggling with depression and had gone on and off many different antidepressants before, you know, they came to me, and they didn't really work for this person. They had very strong reactions and side effects. And they said to me, the best antidepressant they ever took was going off sugar and processed food and fast food. And they felt so completely different. Then the therapy worked so much better. And because, you know, if somebody's reeling from both things, the way they're not feeling well and they're feeling emotionally upset, or they're going through a divorce, or they're going through whatever hardship they're going through. Because, you know, Bhavani, we all have a story.
Right.
Anybody that we talk to has a deep story, and you never know what someone has been through or what someone is carrying in their heart until you really know. And if that really touches me about all of us, about what it means to be human, and the compassion and empathy that we need to give other people and ourselves as well. But then, you know, coming into the self-care, you know, that changes our chemistry, and then it helps our chemistry for our emotional struggles, our spiritual struggles, have such a better chance to heal.
Right.
And that's
right.
One of the reasons I love having an integrative practice.
Yeah, I know when they are creating processed foods, they literally, there's a whole psychology to it. They really, you know, they measure how much they have to put in a food to make it addictive, and how much they can cut back and still keep it addictive but get the most profit out of it. I mean, it's such a science. You know, these foods that are made in laboratories as opposed to kitchens, it's really scary.
It's so troubling. And, you know, one thing that I've been thinking a lot about, and I actually gave a talk about this recently, is one of the big themes that I'm seeing, and I know you will and your audience will so, I believe, relate to this, is that either people have lost touch with or never have been in touch with what their bodies truly need. And, you know, and with all that fast food and all the advertising and what kids, so many kids are growing up never having a real home-cooked meal.
Right. It's unbelievable. It's
so true. Really is. So they don't really even know what that looks like and or that experience of it.
Right.
So they don't even have those memories to think back when they used to have, you know, when their grandmother used to make them this great food, or their mother, a lot of people never experienced it. Or,
right.
as I said, people just eat on the run. They there's something that I call the grab shove syndrome. And one of the things I do when people come to me for looking at their lifestyle and their nutrition and their health, and both really physically and emotionally, because that's really the whole picture, and spiritually, of course, you know, and I ask them, what did you have for lunch? And there's a lot of people, and a lot of women have said this, that they just run through the kitchen, grab something, and shove it down their throat. And so many people have said that exact thing to me. That's why I'm mentioning it. It's not just one person.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way some people eat. And I often think, what would it be like, picture a split screen where someone on the other side of the screen, the other side of the world from that image is, you know, even sitting down or even standing, if someone had to stand, they have no time, but eating something beautiful. A healthy leftover, like the recipe you gave today was so wonderful. You know, that there is a way to make things, have great leftovers, have things in someone's house that they can grab, but it's something whole and something nourishing.
Right.
And so it goes back to this very basic, a very basic concept is, what do we do and what do we need to do to nourish ourselves both psychologically, nutritionally, and spiritually, and they all need to become aligned.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, one thing you were saying, when people are just grabbing things, you know, I was talking to someone recently who was saying how they've improved their diet so much and they're eating healthy, but they don't cook. And I was trying to talk to them, saying, well, if you're not cooking, you can't be eating as healthy as you think. And they're talking about how they, you know, well, you know, we were talking about what they had, and it was a wrap, you know, a grilled chicken wrap. And I'm like, okay, well, think about it. I mean, have you ever tried to buy a wrap that doesn't have preservatives in it? It is almost impossible to find a wrap that doesn't have preservatives in it. You know, I sometimes go to where restaurant shop called Restaurant Depot, you know, and I get paper towel and aluminum pans there and things like that, and my latex gloves, but there's no food there really that I can buy. Every wrap there has artificial preservatives in it. Nothing's organic. The chicken, you know, is going to be has antibiotics and hormones
in it. Yeah, factory farmed,
you know,
which is so sad.
Yeah, I mean, so if you're eating out all the time, there's no way you can be eating healthy. People have to get back to cooking, because that's the only way to really know what your ingredients are. And you know, and what I try to share with my audience is that, you know, if you're cooking 90% of the time, then lighten up on yourself and don't make yourself crazy for the 10% you're eating out, you know, because then you ruin your enjoyment of food, which is also feeding you.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't want to go crazy and ruin a dinner for everybody else. You know, if you're going out to dinner with people and start telling them all the bad things they're eating, you can be a real damper. People aren't going to want to invite you.
That's absolutely true.
So, you know, we need to all be cooking at home to really know what we're eating, because a grilled chicken wrap, which might seem like, oh, it's low fat and it's healthy and it's clean, it's not. If you really break down the parts.
No, it really isn't, and I am totally with you on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a challenge, but there is a way to incorporate this and not have, like the recipe you shared today, and I'm sure, I know many others that you share, that doesn't take a long time.
No,
but it
doesn't.
Is getting back into that mode of making things at home with really good, also organic oils. Like a lot of the oils used in restaurants are, you know, commercial GMO, like canola oil,
almost every oil,
vegetable oil, which is also so bad, cottonseed oil, you know, it's soybean oil, which is also GMO.
Right, corn, soybean, and cottonseed, and canola.
All
those
GMO.
Are the oils, and those are the ones that are most heavily GMO'd, almost 100%.
And I have a whole section in my book in the chapter on the nutrition, biology of wellness, is all about that, about GMOs, because I also feel very passionate about that.
Let's take a couple-minute break. When we come back, let's go into your book and talk about that.
Sure,
I really want to share that with everyone. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, everyone, you're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network with my guest, Dr. Marla Friedman. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody. Welcome back, and I apologize for that technical difficulty. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Marla Miller Friedman, and we're talking about her new book, Love, Freedom, and Wellness, A Guide to Living an Empowered Life. Marla, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Sorry about that cutout. I don't know what happened, but I'm glad we're back.
I'm so glad we're back.
Yeah, what inspired you to write this book, and what is the message of this new book?
Okay, and I just wanted to say, just to clarify, that my last name is Friedman.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Everyone, I knew Marla a long time ago when she
okay.
had a different last name.
Thank you anyway. I just wanted to make it clear so it's not confusing. So my book is something, thank you for asking about this, Bhavani. It has a lot of meaning to me. I think I wanted to write this book because with the hope of giving people hope, number one, that things can heal and change deep within, and no matter what, there are silver linings and ways to overcome our adversities, and to touch many more lives, because I'm in my office in Glen Head, New York, and I'm very honored to say, you know, I spend my life helping people, but this is to spread the message to a wider range of people. So to touch many lives, more lives with light and creativity and helping people reawaken in themselves what is possible for them. So that's really why I wrote the book. The other reason I wrote the book is because it really is a true integration of the psychology of wellness, the biology of wellness, biology and nutrition, and the spirituality and empowerment of wellness, because all those aspects are crucial in this journey of bringing this into our lives. You know, one of the most common things that people say to me, and this is what I call universals, things that many people say, the same exact thing, and many people say, I know what to do, but I can't get myself to do it. And I find that quite fascinating. But that's the way the human being, you know, human beings work, because we don't work from logic, you know, or the world would look very, very different than it does. And that many people have unhealed hurts. They have things that they've never resolved and things that they aren't even necessarily that conscious of, but they know something isn't right because they sabotage themselves. And in different ways, and it goes back to that ability to integrate self-care, to give nourishing things to ourselves on all levels. And so these elements are just so crucial, and I see that there's a huge gap between psychology and nutrition in the world, because if people often go to a psychologist, they or purely dealing with the psychology issues, which are greatly important and can be greatly helpful. But if they go to a new, but they're not being asked what their lifestyle is or how they're eating and looking at it from both points of view, because we are biochemical, nutritional beings and psychological, spiritual, and so forth beings.
Mm-hmm.
In the nutrition world, many people look only at the nutrition, and they're not really knowing how to help people with the deeper problems that are really struggling with, that get in the way and create resistances to implementing a program, let's say a life program, which as I call it, of developing a really, truly lifestyle that honors their being, that puts honor, love, and self-respect into their body, into their cells, into their spirit, into their minds. So that's really what is my inspiration to have written the book.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talked about a universal, issue or, you know, that people say of knowing what to do but not being able to make themselves do it. Is it as simple as, is there a universal answer as to why
people, yes.
This is human nature, or is that more individualized for each person?
Well, I think I just, you know, what I just said, you know, I was speaking to that in terms of, and what comes to mind as you ask that is often unresolved hurts and conflicts that they have deep inside, or low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Of many people treat other people better than they treat themselves, or they have a deep relationship problem. And I do a lot of work with relationships, mm-hmm. relationships with self and with their significant other. And that has a huge effect on our health. And many people are in very unhappy relationships or in deep struggle or having difficulties with their kids, dealing with unhealed addictions. I mean, there's so many different things that contribute to, you know, that concept of not being able to do what they want to do for themselves. And that in itself becomes a source of deep frustration. And often then people beat themselves up for that, which
right.
is obviously the opposite of what they need. You know, so it is a very much a human problem, but it can be figured out, it can be healed, and it can be practiced. And in fact, you know, it actually creates new neuronal pathways when we start talking to ourselves differently inside, when we're much more self-supporting, even if we're struggling with something, instead of being self-supporting, instead of beating ourselves up and making ourselves feel worse. And I have talked about this many times. I think about this a lot, that many people are walking around fighting with themselves inside. They might say hello to their friend, and their friend doesn't even know they're going through that.
Right.
So, and that trickles down to how they treat themselves, how they eat, how they, the basics of self-care, you know. And when we think of it, it goes way, way back. For some people, many people, to their childhoods, to young, being very young, and there's traumas that people have endured, or, you know, they just never were given a feeling of self-care and learning how to honor themselves, so they never learned it. And many people, no matter what age they are, they could be 60, 70, 80 years old. They'll say, I never learned how to eat healthy, but I want to learn now. So
right.
it's never also too late to start, which
right.
is very exciting.
Yeah, it is. And it's amazing how many people are affected from their childhood. I mean, people think, like, you know, you're 60 years old and they're still talking about, well, how my mother treated me when I was a kid. And, you know, it's just amazing how deep some of those hurts can go and still be affecting you 50 years later, 60 years later.
Well, we are totally on the same page because it's absolutely true. You know, some people think exactly like what you said, that, well, they're now 50 or 60, and why haven't they, you know, you should be over that by now.
Right.
But the
right.
truth is that what I've seen as a longtime therapist, that it's not about, my work is not about particularly dwelling always in the past, because, you know, it's healing what got is unresolved from then and then bringing it into the present. But when that does get healed, it's amazing how it can change things.
Mm-hmm.
And give someone a new inspiration, it's like a new lease on life. And that's why therapy, when it's done well, is so crucial. And I think it's such a crucial part of nutrition. Therapy and nutrition go together. And one of the things I love about it is that it gives me a much bigger toolbox to help people.
Right.
And, like, for example, even the issue of sleep. You know, like when I see someone who's depressed, whether it's an adult or a kid who is not doing well in school, and you find out, and I always ask, like, what's their diet like? What's their sleep like? You know, you find out, this could be a whole other show sometime, and there needs to be one, whoever you would have on, about, you know, the technology and how kids are staying up to all hours of the night looking at their, you know, while their parents are sleeping, they're looking online. No, they're on their, you know, computers, and they're not getting enough rest, and they're eating junk all day.
Right.
And that's why they're not doing well, and they're not feeling well, and they're depressed. And their whole lifestyle needs to be looked at, and the effect of what is needed in families to set kind of healthy boundaries so that the kids can thrive. And the more that happens, the more it spreads to other families. So, you know, these are all opportunities for growth and healing and change. And, and I love the idea of closing the gaps instead of leaving the gaps there. So when people come for psychology, let's say, but it turns out that their nutrition and their health, or they have sleep apnea that's never been, you know, diagnosed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, their diet comes into it, their lifestyle comes into it, then they're sleeping better, then they're, then their psychology improves.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many relationships are in struggle over somebody snoring in the relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I've thought about a great deal, and it's a very interesting dynamic because a lot of people are struggling with that. And one of the things I learned about snoring, even if people do not have, in quotes, sleep apnea, if they're snoring, they are not getting enough oxygen when they're sleeping. And it puts a strain on their brain and their body, and they might not be in REM sleep long enough. And, you know, eating well and doing all these great things are great, but nothing can replace sleep. Like, we really need to sleep well, which, of course, eating healthy helps tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But all these pieces fit together of what's going on in someone's life. And one other thing I wanted to mention is how many people go to the doctor, a regular doctor, and they're never asked what they eat.
Isn't that amazing?
Even oncologists.
It's amazing. And even if you say, well, I'm trying to heal myself through diet, they say, well, that doesn't really help.
Oh, yeah. That's not really important.
Negate it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Marla, we are just about out of time. But I'd like you, before we do sign off, I'd like you to share with everybody how they can get in touch with you, or if you have a website that they could go to.
Oh, sure. My website is drmarlafriedman.com, and it's D-R without a dot. drmarlafriedman.com is my website. My email is info@drmarlafriedman.com, and my office number is 516-674-3388.
Great.
And I just want to say, you know, thank you so much for having me on. There is huge hope and healing possible for every person. And sometimes we just need another person to open a door, turn on the light, and see the possibilities. That the best thing I can say is therapy is seeing what you don't see about yourself.
Right.
And that can unlock huge potential of change that is wanted and needed. So
great.
Thank you so much, Bhavani.
You're
and
welcome.
Everyone.
And everybody
listening
out there, I hope you are thriving and eating well, and you know that if you are struggling, you can get that help. Have a great rest of the week. I will be with all of you again next week. Bye for now.